I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. It is 4:30 p.m. Eastern, the 6th of August, 2020. I've got an interesting, very interesting clip from Pandemic.
It's all making sense now why they had to destroy the reputation of hydroxychloroquine. A friend of mine who lives in California has been doing a lot of research on vaccines during emergency pandemics. And she's done a tremendous amount of research. I'm not going to give her name here because she doesn't need to be harassed. But she's done a lot of research and has found that vaccines, in order to be approved for emergency use during a pandemic, while bypassing the normal safety testing, it has to be a situation where there is, quote, no other alternative therapeutic that has been shown to be effective. In other words, if hydroxychloroquine were shown to be effective, then the vaccines would have to undergo more rigorous safety testing. That's how the law is written. So in an emergency pandemic, you can bypass safety testing if there's no other treatment available. So that explains everything. This is why they had to attack America's frontline doctors. This is why Big Pharma has been telling the tech giants to censor anyone who talks about hydroxychloroquine. This is why every effort has been made to censor people who are critical of vaccines. The vaccine companies stand to make hundreds of billions of dollars. In fact, they've already been awarded billions of dollars worth of contracts just in the United States alone, not even to mention around the world. And if they had to go through the normal safety testing, then their profits would be delayed for, well, probably years, but maybe forever, because many of these vaccines are so dangerous, they could never be proven safe. So to bypass the safety testing and get emergency approval, they had to be able to say, well, there's no alternative therapeutic. That's the whole reason. This is astonishing. This just shows you what lengths the drug cartels will go to in order to make money. They will kill people. They will rig clinical trials of drugs they're trying to destroy, like hydroxychloroquine. And they will make sure that the patients in that trial have a fatal dose, which is what happened. And then those people died, and they said, well, look, people died on the drug. Yeah, you killed them with a fatal dose. But they rig it that way because that's what they wanted. They wanted that outcome. They will kill people to protect their profits. They are doing it right now. And the American people are waking up to this. I've never seen more people aware of the harm that Big Pharma causes than right now. Now, I've been talking about this for, what, 20 years? I've been probably the most prominent, most outspoken voice in America trying to bring attention to the criminality of Big Pharma for 2 decades. And until recently, most people didn't believe what I was saying about that. They thought, no, the drug companies, they love you. They're nice companies. They just want to help people. I even remember Rush Limbaugh, who I used to listen to before the COVID-19 situation, during which Rush Limbaugh lost his mind and, I don't know, became an anti-science moron or something. So I don't even know what he's saying now. But I remember for the last few years when I would hear his show from time to time that he was all pro-Big Pharma. He said the drug companies are just trying to make an honest profit. And he criticized leftists, saying that leftists don't like corporations to make money. And he said it's crazy that there would be corporations that would harm their patients or harm their customers to make money. He said that's ridiculous. That's absurd. Well, I wonder if he believes it now. I bet he does, because now the drug companies are, of course, going after hydroxychloroquine and trying to, you know, discredit Trump, who was an advocate of that off-patent drug. I wonder what Rush Limbaugh is saying now. It's not like I'm going to tune in to find out, because I've got, you know, better sources to listen to than somebody who doesn't know anything about medicine or science or virology or anything like that. But I bet you he's changed his tune on that, because millions of Americans have changed their tune. Millions. They've come to realize that Big Pharma really is a predatory industry of criminals who will do anything to make money, even if it means killing people. Now, Trump has declared war on Big Pharma. That's a big deal, and that's fascinating that that's happened. In fact, that's why Trump is going underground. He's kind of going into hiding now because of Big Pharma trying to kill him. Trump said in a public statement that there are really wealthy middlemen who make most of the money from the drugs. They are the drug distributors. They make hundreds of billions of dollars. And they, and he says, nobody knows who they are. It's the stealth profit skimming operation, this monopoly operation, where the FDA protects their monopoly, and then they charge any price they want to the government, federal government, state governments, insurance companies, what have you, and they rip off the American people. And they've been getting away with it for decades for the very same drugs that cost a fraction of the U.S. price overseas. So, you know, a statin drug in America, for example, you can go to Mexico and get it for one-tenth the cost, or Canada for one-fifth, or India for one-twentieth, you know. These drugs are available all over the world for dirt cheap fees. So why are we getting ripped off in this country? Why are we destroying our economy, in essence, by looting everybody and making them pay these ridiculously high fees on pharmaceuticals? Well, Trump has figured out we've got to end that system. He's figured out we got to go buy drugs overseas and bring them back to the U.S., bypassing the U.S. price monopolies. And he has openly declared that that's what he's doing. And he's signed executive orders to try to take down the drug cartel monopolies that exist in the United States. And that has made him the enemy of the drug cartels, the very same, you know, black ops groups that have been targeting me for years, because I've been one of the most effective voices waking people up to all of this. And they run black ops. They run assassination teams, hit squads, negative PR operations to smear you, to censor you, to silence you, to try to infiltrate your company, to try to get your email, newsletter, blacklisted, everything. Anything they can do. DDoS attacks, cyber hacks, SQL injection attacks on your data server, anything. That's what they do. Because Big Pharma's got essentially unlimited billions of dollars. And so they just spend it on harassing everybody and killing people that they don't want to stick around.
Well, that was an interesting little bit of information from Mike Adams from pandemic.news. Big Pharma trying to kill Trump because his new legislation reduces drug prices. And I guess the hit squads are out against Trump, which probably will make some people on the left happy. Contact Report 248 is where we're picking up here. And they're talking about, and I think we sometime talked about this before, but they're talking about how music is such a reflection of the people that write the music. And it's very interesting. Let me continue here. It says, Patassas, this has been a well-known fact to us for tens of thousands of years. People always arrange music according to their evolutionary insight and knowledge and cognition, as well as according to the corresponding feelings and thoughts, ethics, and consciousness. So therefore, according to the character of their personality, in addition, it is to be frighteningly noted with the people of the earth that they make so-called music that truly has nothing at all to do with music, and that it influences the psyche and the consciousness so destructively that the worst disharmony arises. But this so-called music is the reflected likeness of those who produce it or listen to it, whose psyche is agitated and destroyed, and whose evolution is frighteningly stagnated, in that these people are hostile to life and incapable of sustaining their own lives. And they stroll along the path of massive destruction. This music, which is nothing more than a screaming disharmony, emits the worst destruction. Contempt for mankind, contempt for creation, the will for destruction, and the disregard for human rights and the rights of life. This is in contrast to truly harmonious music, which develops the psyche and evolution, which is affirmed in a life of respect for human beings and respect for other life forms, in compliance with the life-promoting laws and commandments. I thought that was a very interesting little bit of information. Some of these contact reports have some very, very interesting information in them. And another one here that I kind of enjoyed, it talks about chunks of ice falling from the sky. And I'll pick up there. Another question, Billy, this is Billy speaking. Another question, it happens very often that smaller and larger chunks of ice fall from the sky, with some clearly coming from airplane toilets, when these are mixed with feces. But others must be of another origin. Every now and then, there are also some genuine pieces of hail, where the individual pieces are often very large. Indeed, hundredweight pieces and even larger pieces fall to the earth every now and then, and the scientists and also the layman cannot explain the origin of these pieces of ice. We already talked about this in 1975 when you explained to me on the Great Journey that these are ice meteors that penetrate individually or in entire swarms into the earthly atmosphere and fall to the ground without them dissolving, respectively melting during the downfall. In addition, the question, does this explanation possess general validity apart from the pieces of ice from airplane toilets? Ptah says, apart from the pieces of ice whose origin is to be found in aircraft, all of the pieces of ice are those that drift through free space and arrive into the gravitational field of the Earth, where they crash down upon the planet. That they have esoteric factors and must be regarded as such, falling pieces of ice, perhaps, as even coming from another dimension and falling upon the Earth. As esoteric people and other believers in ghosts maintain, there has no veracity, right? Certainly not, for these assertions are esoteric fairy tales. Billy says, then I'm already at the question. For several hundred of years, powerful explosions in the sky have been repeatedly registered throughout the whole world. This happens over desert areas, as well as very often over lakes and seas, and even ordinary landscapes aren't excluded from this. 1908, for example, is one of those years because huge explosions took place over Lake Constance, which found entrance into history as sea bellows. Also, sea shootings became a common expression, as well as other designations. The explanations for these were very varied, ranging from cannon shootings to war battles, up to the assertions of delusional believers that dimension gates would explosively tear up the sky, etc., in modern times. And the presence of such explosions are attributed to the breaking of the sound barrier by jets, as well as machinations of UFOs. In the past decade, such incidents have often occurred in Europe, as well as from the 1st to the 10th of November, 1977, in northern Germany, as well as in southern Lower Saxony and North Hesse, whereby, from a lack of understanding of these things, it became seriously maintained that enemy aircraft had carried out tests on breaking the sound barrier. Even the UFO theory found diligent believers. Everything is nonsense, of course, because the explanation for these massive explosions is so simple that it almost seems laughable that the Earth scientists haven't bumped into it for a very long time. For my part, even I have figured this out, though I'm not a scientist, and that I was right. Quetzal confirmed this to me And I made known to him my theory, based on the experiences of huge explosions that I witness in various desert areas of the world and over several large lakes and seas, which on the other hand I designated as airquakes, and on the other hand as dry thunderstorms. That's an interesting term, dry thunderstorms. I don't think I've ever heard that before. Which, in my opinion, under special climactic conditions, lead to huge explosions in the atmosphere and even cause airquakes that shake everything, even the surface of the earth. But such events have already existed since ages ago, whereby the delusional believers, of course, couldn't give any explanations for them, which is why they attributed the incidents to ghosts or to esoteric factors, as well as dragons, Mars, and monsters. The same was also done with ice cracks. When in frozen lakes and rivers, etc., cracked icebergs burst. Now the question is whether there are still other explanations for such events, apart from those that I figured out myself and that have been confirmed by Quetzal, including therein are also the meteors that graze the Earth's atmosphere, explode and produce loud or soft cracking sounds, which are particularly heard quietly at night, but also during the day when the blasts of exploding meteors are strong and loud enough. But that's some very interesting stuff there. Ta says, there are no other explanations for this because those are exhaustive. Such events of nature and the elements are not restricted to Earth because these are natural events that take place on all planets and moons throughout the whole universe. When they have suitable atmosphere and climate change possibilities. Maybe that's a good place to stop. I think we're on line 40 of Contact Report 248. If you want to pick this up and read it on your own, you can do that at www.futureofmankind.co.uk/Billy Myers/ Contact Reports. Just Google Future of Mankind. You should be able to find it. Although sometimes it seems like it's been getting harder to find lately. We've been talking about anxiety and doubt in the book Might Have Thoughts. And particularly one line on page 168 of the Might of Thoughts book, which says, but that is bound with the necessity of rigorously excluding anxiety and doubt, because these are evil elements of disintegration, which are able to break or bend every straight line of every evolutive effort. It can make all efforts useless, ineffective, and can ruin them. Let's define a few terms first, just so it's clear. Anxiety is a feeling of worry, nervousness, or unease, typically about an imminent event or something with an uncertain outcome. Doubt is a feeling of uncertainty or a lack of conviction. Now, this is where it gets into the key words that Billy is saying here. He's saying, but that is bound with the necessity of rigorously excluding anxiety and doubt. Necessity means being required or indispensable, so we have to do this. Rigorously means in an extremely thorough and careful way, so we have to be very careful and thorough to exclude anxiety and doubt. And why? Because they're evil elements of disintegration, which are able to break or bend every straight line of every evolutive effort and can make all efforts useless, ineffective, and can ruin them. Now, interestingly, the German word for anxiety is angst. Anxiety It appears to be a compound word in German, like angst-ridden, which would be angst-beherrscht. It's probably not the best pronunciation. But you see angst used in compound words a lot. And I found a little passage in Goblet, in the Goblet of Truth, the Kelch der Wahrheit, which kind of elaborates on this. It says, truthfully, a completely different way must be taken if you want to find and discover those things on the other side of the tumult of the world and of the angstful and ambitious, fear-filled, as well as guiltful and nervous life, which contain higher values, which, however, has nothing to do with illusionary enlightenments and fabulated godly spheres and unrealities of being, but rather solely along with the effective truth of reality. Might Have Thoughts, page 168. Anxious and doubtful thoughts never lead to progress and success. Consequently, nothing which has a positive value can ever be achieved as a result of them. Rather, at all levels, only that which is negative. Page 168, Might Have Thoughts. If any of these aspects arise, whereby especially anxiety and doubt play an especially negative role, then all good thoughts end and lose themselves in a chaos of unfulfillable purposelessness. So all your good thoughts can just end if you have anxiety and doubt in there. What really impacted me when I read this statement is the way it says all good thoughts end. That seems to be pretty dramatic. So with anxiety and doubt, you can come to a point where you're not having any good thoughts, only bad thoughts. And I think if you have only bad thoughts in your psyche, leads me to think a lot of bad things could happen. Might Have Thoughts, page 168. Even strong thoughts end the moment that anxiety and doubt creep into them. And there's an interesting passage in the Laws and Recommendations of Behavior book. You can find that at the Future of Mankind. They've translated a few pages of this book, which I've looked at before, and I'm surprised I haven't come back to more often. It looks like a fantastic book. If you take yourself and the things which arise in relation to you too seriously, then you inflict upon yourself very great harm. So don't take yourself too seriously. Don't take what you're trying to do too seriously. Don't blow it out of proportion. That doesn't mean you're not going to continue to strive. That doesn't mean, you know, of course it means you're going to stay in the law of harmony. You're not going to let yourself have anxiety and doubt if something is, you know, if you're dealing with it seems like every day has circumstances that are challenging. So, and you don't want to take it too seriously, or you'll inflict harm on yourself. So that means you have to be neutral. You have to kind of be neutral positive. And you also inflict upon yourself great harm if you make yourself dependent on other human beings through your wrong thinking, feeling-based imagination. You feel dependent or needy. So do not allow those needy thoughts to get in, the dependent thoughts. Might Have Thoughts, page 168. But you can tell I'm stuck on that page, right? From that, it follows that anxiety and doubt are the greatest enemies of knowledge. And if they appear, they're able to destroy and annihilate everything. So, again, we've been talking about the law of harmony. And the law of harmony says we should be in a neutral, positive thinking state. If you have anxiety and doubt creep in, so they kind of come in stealthily sometimes, quietly, they creep in, and pretty soon you're having bad thoughts, bad thoughts, bad thoughts. You're out of neutral positive. So we want to prevent that. So you want to, it's a necessity that we rigorously avoid anxiety and doubt. Go back to that again. It is a necessity for rigorously excluding anxiety and doubt because they're evil elements of disintegration. So they'll cause your whole thought world to disintegrate. That's a good thing to write down. Anxiety and doubt cause your whole thought world to disintegrate. And they lead to an ineffectiveness, uselessness. It can ruin your world of thoughts. And your world of thoughts gets ruined. Your world gets ruined. So you don't let that happen. Another Krishna natural law that I do talk about a lot, besides striving, working, focusing, staying to a schedule, system and order. And the two goes hand in hand. Because when the schedule pops up and says it's time to do something, you got to stick to it. You got to do it, right? So that means you're striving. So striving, which is, I call the second creational natural law, works hand in hand with system and order. Solely by the law of system and order, the whole universe will be maintained. In the law of system and order, the absolute universal love is embedded. So the only way I could understand that would be when we heard Sannyasi say love and wisdom go together. And the creation and its laws are love and wisdom at the same time. So system and order is a form of wisdom. So it says universal love is embedded, which by its own effort, each form of life must acquire. If the human being wants to be healthy, happy, and successful in material life, then the daily life has to be structured and adhered to in every respect according to the very same law and order. So if you can adjust your schedule so that your work day is very similar to your weekend, then that is a very good thing too. Then every day feels like every other day. And it's, you know, it's funny. It's not boring. You'd think it would be boring, but it's really not. It takes and makes your life purposeful. And you know what's coming next, and you don't struggle against it. Now, if you feel really terrible or something, just lay down, and yeah, you might miss something. But that's the exception. That's not the rule. So what is demanded of us within the material sphere of life that will enable us to shape our life in accordance with the law of system and order? For this law to become effective in our daily life, many factors have to be considered. Among them, I deem the following important to be learned and observed. Reliability, conscientiousness, punctuality, exactness, discipline, correctness, a sense of duty, orderliness. So when you're conscientious, it means that you're wishing to do your work and duty thoroughly and well. You know, the thing we're trying to avoid is aimlessness and purposelessness. So if you have the system in order working, you stay productive and your life has much, much more meaning because the meaning of your life, your sense of life, comes from striving. And this is a great bit of wisdom to hold on to. Your sense of life, in fact, your delectation, your satisfaction, your happiness is really dependent not on entertainment, but your willingness to strive. So maybe that's a good place to stop until next time. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder.